My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life, some days are good and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work, both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
All right, we're changing the schedule around here a little bit in the final hour. Our draft guest needed to be moved back a little bit, but Greg Wyshynski, always our hockey champ, is available right now. So we're going to bring Greg on, and we appreciate it, Greg, your patience and doing this on such short notice. At Wyshynski on X on Twitter, he is the senior NHL writer at ESPN, and former Puck Daddy, if you remember when we referred to Greg as Puck Daddy many years ago. Was that with Yahoo at that time?
It was, and they're back. Like, they're doing all these crazy good things. They just made a deal with the Hockey News to have their content on their site, and they're like doing newsletters and stuff. I'm very happy to see some of my old colleagues that are still there thriving with Yahoo Sports. But here's the story on the ground here in Edmonton. I got here yesterday because I wasn't going to risk not getting here like as soon as possible, because it's so damn hard to get here from Florida. There is a Snoop Dogg concert at Rogers Place today. And the ice is not down, right? So it's for a concert. So they're going to have to, you know, get cracking and make some ice in the next couple days and get this place in tip top shape for game 6 on Friday. But tonight it's all about Snoop Dogg here in Edmonton.
So now we know why we went from Tuesday to Friday and not Tuesday to Thursday.
No, we went from Tuesday to Thursday because it takes literally 3 different planes to get here.
Oh, like, so has that been... Yeah, okay. That's fine.
No, I was going to say, I had the same reaction as everybody else when I saw the schedule. It's like, are you kidding me? Like, game 7 isn't going to be until like June 23rd. And then you start to really kind of like figure out the schematics of getting from one place to the other. And it's tough. I mean, you know, I traveled for over 10 hours yesterday to get from Fort Lauderdale to Edmonton because of the lack of direct flights and things like that. And it is the longest distance between two places that we've ever had in the Stanley Cup final. Again, this isn't like the writer's lament or anything. I'm just spelling out why we needed
it's such a rough life you have, but no, traveling is a
rough life.
I'm just curious, is Edmonton the northernmost NHL team? Because it is north of Calgary, isn't it? Or is it west?
I don't know the exact geography. You might be right on that. I don't know how Vancouver plays into this as well, because they're a factor in it.
Well, Vancouver is almost right on the U.S. border, right?
It's close, yeah. But the country itself sort of curves up over at that point when we get more to Washington State. But again, like it's been interesting to navigate the travel. It's been manageable. I mean, there's been some horror stories here and there, but for the most part, I think outside of consuming way too much airport food at like a Buffalo Wild Wings, I think everything else has gone all right.
I just pulled up a map, and
right.
Let me just extend this map out a little bit. It would appear to me that Edmonton, I know my geography. Edmonton appears to be the northernmost NHL team. It is north of Calgary in Alberta. And Vancouver is right on the U.S.-Canadian border. Vancouver, by the way, and you've been there many times. I've been there. It is a beautiful city.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
And, you know, Toronto and Ottawa and Winnipeg are way south of Edmonton.
Yeah. I was going to say, and obviously the Panthers are the southernmost U.S. team playing in close proximity to Miami. So it's been, I mean, it's funny. Like, I've never covered a final where the travel became part of the rallying cry for one of the teams. Like, legitimately, Connor McDavid and other players on the Edmonton Oilers after game, you know, heading into game five, it became drag them back to Alberta. That was sort of the rallying cry for the Oilers in that game. And they did it. I mean, they dragged the Panthers all the way back to Alberta, made everybody very sad on Florida that thought they could close out and win the cup in front of their friends and family. And instead, they're back here, as we all are.
How great, like, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I've watched every game start to finish, but the games in Edmonton have been interesting to me because that place is nuts. And I'm just curious, you've been in all of these buildings for these big games over the years, whether it's a big-time Eastern or Western Conference final or a Stanley Cup final. How good is Edmonton's home crowd?
It's incredible. It's one of the loudest buildings I've ever been in. Maybe only Bell Center in Montreal gets louder when the Canadiens are good, which has been a while. The thing about the Edmonton crowd that I've really come to appreciate, everybody wears a jersey to the game. Like, you know, when you go to games at Madison Square Garden, you get a few people in jerseys in the upper deck, and everybody else is wearing Armani t-shirts because they're going to the...
But that's New York.
Yeah, but it's also other places, too, or it's in Toronto, too.
Well, DC's usually decked out in Caps red, don't you think? They're rocking the red.
But the thing that's different here is that not only is everybody wearing a jersey, but the people that aren't wearing jerseys are coming in costume. That's the thing that people maybe don't realize. Like, walking around an Oilers game, particularly in the playoffs, is like walking around San Diego Comic-Con. Like, there's a guy dressed as a stormtrooper. There's a guy dressed as Chewbacca. There's a woman who paints herself as the Stanley Cup. There were four guys that came in rat exterminator costumes because they're playing Florida. Like, It is the most bizarre thing you've ever seen, where if you're not wearing, you know, a McDavid jersey or some obscure player from like the late 1980s on your back, you're coming in costume. It's bizarre, but it's like the best.
Well, we've also had the one woman who comes dressed in a jersey, but then undresses during the game, and people have been certainly thrilled with her and her championship attitude during the Stanley Cup playoffs. So this isn't where I wanted to start, but let's continue with this because it's happened, you know, before in the NHL, never in the NBA, a team coming from 3-0 down to win a series. What kind of chance do you give Edmonton to win two more? I mean, Connor McDavid, 2 goals, 2 assists in game 5. I mean, how much of a chance do they have to win two more and complete a 3-0 comeback and win the Stanley Cup?
I mean, with McDavid having placed his team on his back, anything is possible. I think he is now up to the 5th highest point total in NHL history in a postseason by an individual player. He has the record. For
who's got the highest? Gretzky or Lemieux?
It's Gretzky, yeah. Okay. He is also the second guy in NHL history, or at least is on track to do so, to have a point on over half of his team's goals in a 4-round playoff run. Gretzky in 87, I believe, is the only other guy to do it. So what we're watching here with Connor is one of the single greatest individual performances in the playoffs in sports history. So when you have that as your baseline, yeah, it's completely conceivable they can come back. But the thing about the Panthers, and this is my caution to all the Edmonton fans that are ready for a party on Friday, I've covered this team for 2 years. You know what they're bad at? They're bad at being the favorite. They're the last team you want 3-0 in a series because they are much more the team that feels the pressure of their backs against the walls, that likes to be counted out, that likes to prove people wrong. You think back to the Boston series last year. Think back to the Rangers series in the conference final where people were ready to coronate the Rangers as Eastern Conference champions. They're much better when people don't think they're going to win. And I think a ton of people don't think they're going to win game six, and that's why it wouldn't surprise me to see them close it out on Friday.
Well, is Connor McDavid a different player as a favorite?
That's a good question. I think that the dynamic psychologically in this series do shift a little bit now that we're in game six and now that they can feel, I mean, it's no longer that people are counting them out. You're right. I mean, it's also people anticipating that the Oilers are going to win here and continue to try to make history. I mean, they're the fourth team in NHL history to go down 3-0 in a series and force a game six. Like, that's how rare it is. This is 29 times a team has gone down 3-0, and this is only the fourth time there's even been a game six in a series. When that's happened. So, you know, they know what they're doing and they know the history behind it. And they know that there's some magic in this run. And they know that as long as Connor keeps, you know, popping 4-point nights, as he's been doing in these two wins, anything's possible. But you're right. I mean, at some point it probably becomes a little bit more real that, you know, they've got something to play for and it's not simply just trying to defy the odds.
We're talking to Greg Wyshynski, senior NHL writer for ESPN. You made a comment, and I want to follow up on it, that Connor McDavid in the midst of the greatest postseason in sports history. You quantified that a little bit before you said it, but just give me, you know, somebody who isn't paying as much attention to it, like, tell me why.
Well, I mean, the numbers bear it out. I mean, he's doing things that we haven't seen since Gretzky and Lemieux, and he's doing things in an era where people don't score like Gretzky and Lemieux, except for Connor McDavid. Fifth, I think, all-time right now for points in an individual postseason. He's only 5 in back of Wayne Gretzky for the most points by a player in an individual postseason. He passed Gretzky in assists in a single playoff, so he holds that record. He's the first guy, I think the first guy to ever go back-to-back 4-point games in the Stanley Cup final. I think he's tied Messier for the most 4-point games in the playoffs for an individual. Like, he's rewriting the record book as we speak, and doing so in dramatic ways that influence the outcome of games. I mean, he won games 4 and 5 on his back. He won their elimination game against the Dallas Stars in the Western Conference final on his back. He doesn't have the overtime heroics necessarily that you would associate with the greatest postseason runs for an individual of all time. But like, what he's doing is unprecedented. We haven't seen it since the 1980s. And at the end of the day, he could end up with the highest point total of any player in the history of the National Hockey League for an individual playoff run. And, you know, I'll put that up against any individual run of an athlete in any sport when he's got that many records to his credit.
Sure, I'm looking at it right now. 8 goals, 34 assists in the playoffs, 42 points. Gretzky's 47 with 17 goals and 30 assists in 1985. Obviously, he's going to need, more likely than not, 2 games to break that. He's going to need games 6 and 7. I would imagine, based on what you just said, that win or lose this series, he's going to get the Conn Smythe.
Yeah, I actually wrote about that. I was ahead of the curve on that. I wrote about that before Game 5, how I think the case was already there for him to win the Conn Smythe, win or lose, and then he goes out and pops another 4-point games, and then everybody is writing about how he's going to win the Conn Smythe, win or lose. I've talked to some of the voters. I think part of the reason why he's got a lane to do this is because there are a couple of candidates on the Panther side. Neither of them really knock your socks off in Bobrovsky and Barkov, especially with the way that Bob has played recently. And so I think that, you know, with all that Connor's accomplished and now having dragged this thing back to a game six, I think the final has gone deep enough where people can feel comfortable making that call and giving him the MVP in a losing effort. And he obviously has the work history to justify it too.
You know, last week when Jerry West passed away, Jerry West is the only player in the history of the NBA postseason to win the MVP of the NBA Finals in a loss. They blew a 3-1 series lead against the Celtics in 1969, lost 4-3, but he won the MVP. In the NFL, it's only happened once. Chuck Howley won the MVP of the Super Bowl in 71. It's only happened once in the World Series where a losing player won the MVP. Bobby Richardson in 1960, the Yankees lost to the Pirates. But the Conn Smythe is different. It's for the entirety of the postseason. But even with that, there are only five players in the history of the sport to win the Conn Smythe and not win the Stanley Cup. So you think he'll be the sixth?
I do. And I think the important thing about that stat is that four of the five have been goalies, in the sense that
right.
It's easier to justify a goalie dragging his team to a cup final loss than anything else. And so Ron Hextall won it in 87, I think it was. And J.S. Giguere won it in 2003 for the Cinderella Mighty Ducks. The only guy that won it that wasn't a goalie was Reggie Leach of the Flyers back in 1976. And there's a lot of parallels between what he did and what Connor did. You know, he set a record at the time for most goals in a postseason by an individual skater. And, you know, he had a huge influence on winning a couple of those series. At one point, he accounted for the majority of his team's goals. I mean, there's a lot of parallels to what he did and what Connor's doing. It's just that Connor is doing it on a more grandiose, record resetting scale. At a time that's post-Gretzky versus pre-Gretzky.
How old of a franchise at that point were the Flyers? What year did they come to the NHL? How much before the Caps?
I think, were the Flyers part of the 68 expansion or not? I forget. But, they won the Cup in 74 and 75, and that's got to be within the vicinity of when they entered the league. They were a pretty brand new franchise and certainly hit the ground running with the whole Broad Street Bullies thing back in the 1970s.
Part of the 67 NHL expansion, and they were the first of those expansion teams. So the first post the original six. All right. So tomorrow night, if you're a sports fan, just tune in just to see what that Edmonton crowd is like for a sixth game that would force a seventh game. Is Game 7 Sunday night?
Game 7 is Monday night. Game 7 is, again, like we're building in some travel time. Yeah, and Game 7 would be Monday, and it's within the realm of possibility we're going to see it, and it's only happened two other times. Detroit, I think, lost in a game Detroit was trailing in the series and then lost in a game seven, I think, in 1945. And then the Toronto Maple Leafs, I think 42 or 43, were the only one that rallied to actually win the cup after going down 3-0. So this is uncharted territory for a team since the 1940s, what we're seeing here from the Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah.
And conversely,
I'm looking at it right now. Four times a 3-0 deficit erased and just once in the Stanley Cup Finals, 1942. You are a historian of the sport, my friend. Let's talk about this Caps trade. I mean, I went immediately when I saw it hit Twitter. I immediately went to the story that you wrote. You called it stunning. How does a guy that gets traded for a year ago and given a $68 million 8-year deal get traded a year later?
Because he was terrible. That's part of what makes it stunning, is that he was such a bust in Los Angeles, Pierre-Luc Dubois. They gave up a number of roster players and a pick to acquire him. More than that, they gave him an 8-year contract, or Winnipeg did, in a sign and trade. And they basically anointed this guy to be the heir apparent to Anze Kopitar as their number one center in Los Angeles. And, you know, he didn't have a great offensive season in LA. He didn't really jive with the system that they were playing. He never really got on track. And then in the postseason, he was a disaster, where I think he only had 1 point and 20 penalty minutes against the Oilers. And so after the season, their GM, Rob Blake, was like, we think we can fix this guy. I mean, we have to try to. I mean, it is my guy that I acquired and signed. But there was always talk about them maybe buying him out. And then obviously, you know, before his no movement protection kicked in, they ship him out to the Capitals. So the Cavs part of this is obvious. Like, they wanted to find a way to get Darcy Kemper off their roster because they have Lindgren as their guy now. But the acquisition of Dubois, I mean, I guess they're going to become the, you know, third or fourth team now to think that they could fix him. And they acquire a guy that has a history of attitude problems at a time when, you know, we're probably a couple years away from what should be a rebuild. So it's, I mean, listen, you know, every team in the league thinks that they can fix the guy that has size and palpable offensive skill as a center. So good luck, because it didn't work in Columbus, and it didn't work in Winnipeg, and it didn't work in Los Angeles.
Well, I think you basically just answered my next question when you said he's had attitude problems, because to me, not knowing, you know, Pierre-Luc Dubois, you know, history, to me, anytime a guy gets traded for and then a year later with $68 million in 8 years in a contract extension, they're willing to move on from him. That's a major red flag. No matter how bad the season was, you'd expect at least a little bit more leeway after such a big-time trade a year ago. But there's got to be more than just he had a bad year. Maybe he's difficult.
Yeah, and I think that there was a notion of it's going to get worse before it gets better, too. I mean, this is a Kings team that's a veteran team that needs to push for a cup now while they still have Kopitar and Doughty performing at a, you know, somewhat elite level. And so they can't wait around to figure out if this is going to be a fit or not. And the longer you wait, the harder it is to buy him out, the harder it is to trade him. And, you know, I give Rob Blake credit. Like, I think that this the Dubois trade that they made and the contract they signed him to will always be a black mark on that guy's record as general manager. But he pulled the nose up a little bit by finding a way to get him off the team while also addressing their primary need, which was to acquire a goaltender. Darcy Kuemper is better than Cam Talbot. He's better than David Rittich. He's better than a lot of guys that they put in that spot in the last couple of years. And so, you know, I give him credit for finding a way to make, you know, egg salad out of rotten eggs, if you will. And for the Caps, like, I can see it. I mean, you know, Backstrom is in the situation he's in. They traded Kuznetsov. They're thin up the middle, you know, due respect to Strome. And you hope that maybe something gets unlocked in this guy. And if it does, then you've got him locked in long term. And you've gotten yourself a center that hasn't probably even reached his prime yet. So I understand from their perspective why they did it. I just don't know if this guy is ever going to be able to figure it out unless he finds some real maturity, I think, in the next couple of years.
But Greg, if he doesn't, you know, figure it out, if they don't help him figure it out, wouldn't it be really difficult to trade him in his contract next year? Won't they be on the hook for, I don't know, 50-something million dollars over the next 7 years? Because if they don't make it work next year and they want to move on, no, there aren't going to be many takers. Will there be?
There won't be at all. And I think the remedy then probably becomes a buyout of some sort if you actually needed to get this guy out of there. But, you know, the gamble that Ryan McClellan is taking and the gamble that I guess in some ways Spencer Carberry is going to take too, although, you know, he's not the guy that made the trade, is that they're going to be able to unlock something in this guy, and that, you know, maybe the what happened in Los Angeles is the real come to Jesus moment that this guy needs to find his game and be the player everybody thinks he can be. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. This is not going to be one and done. Like, this is going to be a multiple year play for Dubois and the Capitals. And don't forget the Ovi of it all. I mean, like, they've made a vow to Alex Ovechkin when he decided to stay and try to break this record as a Capital that they were going to stay competitive and surround him with talented players and try to, you know, push for playoff spots. And, you know, it happened this year. It was brief, but it happened. And this is, as much as we're bemoaning him, I mean, this is in some ways an upgrade for their center position over what they could have started the season with next season.
Really appreciate it, as always. Always enjoy the conversation. Greg is, you know, super sharp. He's a great guest to have on. Senior NHL writer at ESPN, at Wyshynski, Wyshynski on Twitter. He is made his way through 17 connections to get to Edmonton for the game tomorrow night. Enjoy it. Thanks for the perspective on the Caps trade. Hope you're well.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Yep, Greg Wyshynski, everybody. We'll talk NBA draft in about 10 minutes. Did you hear about the NCAA tournament thinking about expanding again? I've got something on that next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team 980.com.
From the mind of a 2 foot tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Why does this room look amazing? What'd you change?
Oh, I just got these custom shades from Blinds.com. It's all online, so it's really easy. Great price, too.
Ugh, I remember shopping for Blinds. I waited around all day just to get a quote.
Hi, sorry I'm late. I know you said just the bedroom, but what do you feel about the
bathroom?
I feel
like I had to say yes, just to get rid of her.
All right, just go ahead and sign here and we'll get everything taken care of.
It took forever, and the worst part, hidden fees. How about you?
I chatted with my Blinds.com design consultant on my time, got free samples, and it was all super high quality at a great price. Plus, they make it easy to DIY or add installation like I did.
Blinds.com sounds way better.
Way better. And everything comes with their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, check this out. I can control them from my phone.
Whoa, magic.
There's a better way. Shop Blinds.com for up to 45% off. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Window Nation's the answer to this heat wave if you've got older windows. We're going to have more of this throughout the summer. You're paying way too much on your air conditioning bills right now with these 90-degree days. If you've got windows that are 10 years of age or older, you should call Window Nation and take advantage of them extending their semi-annual sale through the end of the month, June 30th. You can still get quality, affordable, energy-saving windows right now. They're giving you 50% off all windows, any window style, 0% interest for 5 years. Plus, if you call them and schedule your estimate now, you'll get a bonus 10% off, so that's 60% off on your window purchase. If you've got older windows and you're tired of high utility bills, Window Nation's maintenance-free windows will fix all of those problems for decades, not to mention your home will look much better. Window Nation's top quality vinyl won't bow in the sun. They're designed with premium insulation and they come with a lifetime warranty. Put an end to your window worries. Call now 866-90-NATION. Go to windownation.com. Mention my name and do it before June 30th. Remember, the estimate, which is quick and easy, is free. There's no obligation. They're not going to pressure you into making an answer or giving them an answer right away. Just call them. Mention my name, 866-90-NATION or windownation.com. So Ross Dellinger from Yahoo Sports put this story out last night that college basketball apparently has moved a step closer to expanding the NCAA tournament in March. NCAA officials presented to all of the Division I conference commissioners two models for an expanded field, one with an additional four teams, so that would mean an additional two first four games. You know, the first four games are on Tuesday and Wednesday night before the bracket of 64 begins on Thursday. There's another model that would expand from 68, the current 68, to 76 teams. So an additional eight teams or an additional four first four games. One of the reasons they're doing this is money, of course. You know, the addition of more first four games gets more at-large teams from bigger conferences into the tournament and gives more of a TV product for networks and for the TV deals. But what they're really trying to avoid, Denton, is eliminating any of the automatic qualifiers from the now 28 small conference leagues. There's been a push in recent years to not have automatic qualifiers from all of those 28 small leagues or smaller leagues, but by expanding the field, they can keep all of those there. Look, I'm fine with another four teams, another eight teams. I just want by Thursday the bracket to be at 64, because I think that's what most people consider to be the NCAA tournament anyway. That's the bracket you fill out. You're not going to all of a sudden fill out a bracket with 76 teams in it. By the way, with 76 teams, an additional eight teams, right? How would that work? So that's another eight winners. That would get you to 68. That doesn't come out to 64. I'd have to spend time working through the bracket breakdown to get to 64 by Thursday. But here's what I don't want. I don't want what some coaches have advocated over the years, which is let's just let basically everybody in. And let's have, you know, instead of 64, let's go to 128, or let's go to 256. Let everybody in and play that tournament. I don't want that. That's too diluting for me. We'll talk NBA draft next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We are free and live on the Odyssey app.
Major League Baseball, Nationals beat the Diamondbacks 3-1. Jesse Winker had a go-ahead two-run homer in the sixth inning. Patrick Corbin pitched five innings, struck out seven, and allowed just one run on three hits. In the NHL, Caps trade Darcy Kuemper to the Kings for Pierre-Luc Dubois. In the WNBA, Mystics fall to the Indiana Fever, 88-81. Ariel Atkins at 27 for the Mystics. Caitlin Clark had a double-double, 18 points, 12 rebounds. Also had six assists for the Fever. In the NBA, Monty Williams fired after just one season in Detroit. The Pistons still owe him $65 million from the original six-year $78 million contract he signed last summer. And that's what's trending.
So I just figured it out. So if they were to expand the tournament to 72 teams from 68, you'd have eight first four games involving 16 teams, and that would leave you with 64 on Thursday. Now, if they expand it to 76, it's a little bit more complicated. But the bottom line is, if you tell me you're going to expand by four teams and you're still going to be at 64 for Thursday, which I think most college basketball fans really view Thursday, Friday to be the first round. And fortunately, they got back to calling it the first round. Remember when they had first round being the first four, and then they called that the second round in the first couple of years after they expanded to 68. But as long as you get to 64 by Thursday, Denton, I think we're all good. If there were an extra, couple of first four games, I don't think anybody's going to care. I just don't want it diluted to the point where you've got like 128. I'm not for that. You know, guys like Gary, I mean, our guy Gary Williams, Hall of Fame coach, Gary's advocated for a lot more teams. Boeheim at one point was advocating for almost everybody, I think. All right. Joining us right now is Adam Finkelstein. Adam is the director of scouting for 24/7 Sports. We're going to talk some NBA draft. But he's also a college basketball insider for CBS Sports. You can follow him on X on Twitter, at Adam Finkelstein. By the way, you just came in, and I was reading from this story that they're considering expanding the NCAA tournament again. You're a college basketball guy. Do you want that or not?
You know, I'd say I'm probably a little more open-minded to that than others. I think you hit the nail right on the head there. You don't want to, like, Thursday and Friday is the day where, like, everybody says they're sick and they stay home from work, and it's like the greatest day of the year, right? And you don't want to sacrifice any part of that. But if there's a way for Tuesday and Wednesday to add to some of that, and make that period longer, I don't know. I'm not totally opposed to seeing what it looks like. I think some people are just very, very opposed to it. But I'm more open-minded, I would say.
We'll get to the draft here in a moment. But, this used to be a sport that you could argue 20 years ago, or maybe it's longer than that now, was, after the NFL and college football, right there, among the most popular, and certainly in terms of viewers. And it's become a one-month-of-the-year sport, and NIL and transfer portal have made it, almost, impossible for coaches. And I'm just curious at what you think the state of the sport is. And also, I wanted to get your thoughts on Danny Hurley staying. I thought that was huge for the sport.
Yeah, I think the sport itself is in a place where it needs some oversight. NIL is running rampant, and there's really no rules. And when the NCAA tries to implement rules, somebody sues them. They've thus far been very successful in court, and so the rule becomes null and void. So I think it's clearly in a place where it needs oversight. I'm hoping it gets to the point where it's, you just have collective bargaining and contracts, and everything is above board right now, because now you have players who are allegedly signing NIL deals for sometimes millions of dollars, maybe even signing contracts, but those aren't public contracts. And so I think it's just in a unsustainable spot right now that's going to have to evolve.
All right, let's talk NBA draft. We get it in two nights, next Wednesday and Thursday of next week. This is a draft without a Victor Wembanyama, and there's really, you would agree, right? There's not a lot of buzz around this draft, but tell me what you think in terms of the quality of it. I mean, is there a player or two that you think could ultimately end up being a massive difference maker in an organization like Washington's?
I think there is. I just don't think we know who that player is yet, which is the... Yeah. Which is the storyline of this draft, because historically speaking, you can go back each and every year and there's an all-star to come out of the draft. Doesn't matter how bad the draft is. 2013 is kind of the worst draft in recent NBA history, and Giannis Antetokounmpo came out of that draft. Rudy Right. Gobert came out of that draft too. Now, other than that, there wasn't too much. But each and every year, you find somebody, and you also find somebody like outside of the top three. You get Draymond Green or Jalen Brunson or, Devin Booker or whoever. These guys were all picked after 10, and that happens each and every
Kawhi
year.
Kawhi Leonard, Giannis, as you mentioned.
Yeah. So what makes this draft, I think, a little bit more confusing is that there's nobody at the top of the draft that scouts and evaluators are excited about. You mentioned Wemby. But not even like Wemby was what we would call like a tier one prospect. There's not even like a tier two guy here. You know what I mean? And so whoever goes number one or number two in normal years, they're somewhere probably after five. And that's somewhat conservative. But again, I do think there's history tells us there is someone in here somewhere who's got star potential. That potential just hasn't really revealed itself yet.
All right. So can we at least guess? I mean, when you say there's no tier two guy, I mean, forget that there's not the, you know, the franchise changer like a Wembanyama, or like people thought about Zion, you know, when he came out. But you're saying that the tier two guys aren't in this draft. Like there's no Brandon Miller. There's no, you know, whomever right. you would consider to be tier two in recent years. So, I mean, that's a bad draft on paper going in.
It is. Yeah, no, 100%. It is a bad draft on paper. And I think what, especially in terms of star power, my kind of, you know, my caveat to that is that somebody is going to emerge who we're not expecting.
Of course.
Know? But the tier one and tier two prospects, they're the guys who have the most outward, the most obvious benchmarks for future success. It's not that they're certain stars. Even Wemby last year, there were people who said, like, hey, is his body gonna last? Is this a sustainable physical archetype? But I think that this year, when you have no one who has such overwhelming markers for future success, everything's a proposition, right? So it's high risk, high reward, or what are you looking for? And what are you willing to risk for it? And I think that's kind of the danger. Like for Washington and Atlanta and teams like that that pick at the top of the draft, I think one of the things that's challenging is that from ownership to fan bases, they're used to a certain return on that investment. And this year, chances are you're not going to get that return, and it's going to go down as like, oh, well, they messed that up, especially if you assume that some star is going to reveal himself in the teens or the 20s or the 30s someday that no one anticipated. I mean, if you talk to the people who drafted, you know, Nikola Jokic in the second round, they will tell you they had a pick in the mid first round. They didn't take him because they had no idea he was going to be this good. But
right.
fans don't remember it that way. You know what I mean? So that's the danger of picking atop this draft is you know, how it's going to be viewed in retrospect.
Yeah, like everybody can say almost, you know, like you just went through the list and we added to it. I mean, when the Wizards picked Jan Vesely in the 2011 draft and Kawhi Leonard went 15 overall, you still had teams like Milwaukee who took Jimmer Fredette, you know, five right. picks behind before Kawhi. You know, there are multiple big mistakes that are made in this draft. It really is. Don't you think unless you have, you know, the true obvious transformational kind of superstar at the top of it, it's actually a bigger crapshoot than even the NFL draft is?
It is a crapshoot. And I think the amount of resources that are invested in this, not just in terms of like going out and scouting, but and by extension, the basketball evaluation. But the amount of evaluation that goes into analyzing these prospects' minds and bodies is something that we don't talk a lot about, like the psychological assessments these guys have to do, the personality tests, the medical testing. So they are really digging in at every level conceivable, and yet still there are going to be mistakes and there are going to be surprises because it's a futures market. You're betting on something not next year, not even 2 years down the road, but what's somebody going to be 5-10 years from now?
All right, let's talk about this draft anyway, though we have no idea the one or two players that will ultimately be really, really good players, star players. But let's look at the Wizards at two. There are two French players that are mocked almost everywhere to go 1-2 in some order. Tell us about them and maybe another player or two that would be worthy at number two overall.
So I think there's probably three guys in the wheelhouse for the Wizards right now. The first is Alex Saar. Alex Saar has been the betting favorite to go number one in this draft. He's a 7-footer He's originally from France, but he played this year in the NBL in Australia after playing the previous 2 years at Overtime Elite in Atlanta. And he is an exceptional mover for his size. He's fluid. He's graceful. He covers the court. That means he can be switchable defensively. It means he can fly around and make up ground in a hurry in defensive rotations. And the defensive end of the floor is where he has the highest upside. You've seen people like to compare him to someone like Evan Mobley, which I think is a good archetype to get in your mind. I'm not sure he's as naturally talented as Evan, but that's the type of player we're talking about. The questions are on the offensive end, because this is someone who averaged, I think, 9 points a game this year in Australia. And he's very lean. He's skinny. And so people say, well, Wemby and Chet were skinny too. That's true. But he's not that level of talent. So you have this mobile but skinny 7-footer, and he's got to add some muscle and be able to play through contact to be able to be a finisher at the NBA level. And then you're really hoping the shooting clicks long term. I think that's the big bet on Alex Saar. But immediate impact defender from day one, some offensive upside that's just not quite there yet, and then he's got to get stronger. That's a quick scouting report on him. I think that is who Washington favors, because when you look at the pieces they have, he can slot in with some of those other young guys, and he can give you a defensive anchor, and things can really start to develop from there. The good news, I think, for Washington is that there's kind of recent news that Atlanta and Saar may not be on the same page. Depending on who you ask, it might be Atlanta or it might be his representatives, but there seems to be some evidence that he's trending away from that number one spot, even though he has been the betting favorite in Vegas. The okay. second guy, the other Frenchman you mentioned, is Zachary Risacher. And this is about a 6'8", 6'9", kind of 3-4, so wing combo forward, who shoots the ball really well from the perimeter. He's got a pretty looking shooting stroke, and he can defend at a pretty high level. So he fits that kind of coveted 3-and-D archetype that has a definite role in the NBA. But he's not a creator. He's not the kind of offensive alpha that you usually see get drafted this high. Now he's getting some momentum to go to Atlanta right now, as we think they're moving off of Saar. He's also got definite interest from San Antonio at 4 if he were to slip that far. And there's speculation that San Antonio could explore moving up to pair a shooting Frenchman with Wemby, because that makes sense on a couple of different levels. I think the third player that Washington fans need to be aware of is Donovan Clingan.
Right.
If Atlanta were to move that number one pick and someone else were to take Saar number one, that creates a situation where if Atlanta has to choose between Risacher and Clingan, they may say, you know what, we've already got young wings here. We just drafted a young wing last year, and we don't want to be redundant with this. And if you look at arguably the three players on our roster who may have a long-term future here with this club, they all play in the middle of the lineup. What we don't have is we don't have our big man of the future, and we don't have necessarily our point guard of the future. So those would be the best fits. I think that's the case if Saar goes one, for Washington to consider someone like Klingon at two, because he is that defensive anchor who's just got tremendous size. And again, some untapped offensive potential when you talk about a guy who's about 7'2", who can dribble, who can pass, and may even be able to shoot down the road.
Yeah, there's no doubt that Klingon, everybody saw him in the tournament and in the championship game and UConn's back-to-back. At 7'2", whatever he is, because he's a large man, I think he's more fluid, more mobile than maybe people even understand. But my question to you is, as you described what Atlanta might do, if the draft is what you say it is, why would somebody come up to number one? Why would there be any interest in jumping up to number one? Is Saar's potential at 7-1, you know, and it's you know, and being a guy that could potentially defend and develop something offensively, is it just that, you know, projection that somebody might think that can happen?
Well, because we're very literally trying to predict the future, different teams and even different voices inside the same team are going to have different opinions. And so some people might have a very different long-term projection for Saar than others. Same for every prospect in this draft. Some of it's situational about like the style of play they utilize. So, for example, Klingon is going to be much more valuable for a team that believes in utilizing a drop coverage defensive scheme in terms of how they defend ball screens. If you want to get out and hard hedge or trap ball screens, Donovan Klingon's probably not your guy. So there's lots of different variables, but again, it comes down to the fact that, that different people and different organizations have different opinions. And the other thing too is some of them, especially when you look at teams like San Antonio, teams like New York, teams like Oklahoma City, they have so many future assets that they can afford to allocate some to move up. So I'll give you a hypothetical. One of the things that's been people have wondered about is if San Antonio really covets Reese Hoshea, could they move up and try and deal with Atlanta? And people have said, well, okay, San Antonio has the 4 and 8 picks, but you know what else they have? They have Atlanta's pick next year. So they could say, hey, we'll swap 4 and 1 and then we'll give you back your pick for next year. So there's lots of different scenarios there, but I think like the amount of assets the team has in their war chest, so to speak, also impacts how aggressive they can afford to be to move up and take a swing on somebody if they really believe in the upside.
We're talking to Adam Finkelstein from 24/7 Sports. He also does work for CBS Sports. I got a minute left here. I wanted just your quick opinion on a couple of players. Can Dalton Connect be a big-time scorer at the NBA level?
Absolutely. The question is whether he's going to be a bad defender or a marginal defender, because he's not going to be a good defender. But yes, I think he can be a good scorer, though.
What about Zach Edey? Where is his draft projection? And I know I've seen a lot of videos of him out there shooting threes, and he actually does not have a bad stroke at all, I don't think. But what are the NBA guys projecting Zach Edey to be at the NBA level?
There's a wide range of opinions on Edey, but the quick hitter is everything I just said about Klingon being system specific is even more so for Edey. Because he's got to play at a slower tempo. He's got to play exclusively drop coverage. And he's got to play for somebody who's willing to throw it into the post a little bit, which not every NBA team does. So if he gets in a setting where they do all those things, I think his upside is higher, but it's very system specific.
All right, give me a player. We both admit that, you know, who the hell knows. But somebody's going to come out of this draft that we're going to point to and say, you know, he went 12th or he went 9th or he went 17th or he was in the second round like Jokic or Draymond. Give me the player that you're actually telling people that you're excited about and you think's got a chance.
The top one on my board is Ron Holland. He finished as the number one high school player in the country last year. He's a big 6'7" wing. He's one of the most competitive players in this draft. He's a high-level athlete. He gets after it defensively. People are concerned about the shooting, but it's not broken, and it's been trending in the right direction the last couple of years, and I just refuse to bet against a hyper-competitive, big-time athlete who plays both ends of the floor and keeps getting better.
You just convinced me, because you talked about all the intangible stuff, and that's a big part of it, is looking for that guy who's a badass competitor. Thanks, Adam. Really appreciate it. Good stuff. Adam Finkelstein, everybody, 24/7 Sports. We are done for the day. Thanks to Adam. Thanks to Greg Wyshynski. Thanks to Nate Davis, who all joined us on the show. Who's up next?
It is the rooster, cock-a-doodle-doo.
Chris Russell back in his chair next, right after a couple of commercials, but just a few. Hang in there for Rooster. Back tomorrow.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Why does this room look amazing? What'd you change?
Oh, I just got these custom shades from Blinds.com. It's all online, so it's really easy. Great price, too.
Ugh, I remember shopping for blinds. I waited around all day just to get a quote.
Hi, sorry I'm late. I know you said just the bedroom, but what do you feel about the
I feel
bathroom?
Like I had to say yes, just to get rid of her.
All right, just go ahead and sign here, and we'll get everything
taken
care of.
It took forever, and the worst part, hidden fees. How about you?
I chatted with my Blinds.com design consultant on my time, got free samples, and it was all super high quality at a great price. Plus, they make it easy to DIY or add installation like I did.
Blinds.com sounds way better.
Way better. And everything comes with their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, check this out. I can control them from my phone.
Whoa, magic.
There's a better way. Shop Blinds.com for up to 45% off. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
So I just figured it out. So if they were to expand the tournament to 72 teams from 68, you'd have 8 first four games involving 16 teams, and that would leave you with 64 on Thursday. Now, if they expand it to 76, it's a little bit more complicated. But the bottom line is, if you tell me you're going to expand by 4 teams and you're still going to be at 64 for Thursday, which I think most college basketball fans really view Thursday, Friday to be the first round. And fortunately, they got back to calling it the first round. Remember when they had first round being the first four, and then they called that the second round in the first couple of years after they expanded to 68. But as long as you get to 64 by Thursday, Denton, I think we're all good. If there were an extra couple of first four games, I don't think anybody's going to care. I just don't want it diluted to the point where you've got like 128. I'm not for that. You know, guys like Gary, I mean, our guy Gary Williams, Hall of Fame coach, Gary's advocated for a lot more teams. Boeheim at one point was advocating for almost everybody, I think. All right. Joining us right now is Adam Finkelstein. Adam is the director of scouting for 24/7 Sports. We're going to talk some NBA draft. But he's also a college basketball insider for CBS Sports. You can follow him on X on Twitter, at Adam Finkelstein. By the way, you just came in, and I was reading from this story that, you know, they're considering expanding the NCAA tournament again. You're a college basketball guy. Do you want that or not?
You know, I'd say I'm probably a little more open-minded to that than others. I think you hit the nail right on the head there. You don't want to, like, Thursday and Friday is the day where, like, you know, everybody says they're sick and they stay home from work and it's like the greatest day of the year, right? And you don't want to sacrifice any part of that. But if there's a way for Tuesday and Wednesday to add to some of that, you know, and make that period longer, I don't know. I'm not totally opposed to seeing what it looks like. I think some people are just very, very opposed to it, but I'm more open-minded, I would say.
We'll get to the draft here in a moment, but you know, this used to be a sport that you could argue 20 years ago, or maybe it's longer than that now, was, you know, after the NFL and college football, right there, you know, among the most popular and certainly in terms of viewers. And it's become a one-month-of-the-year sport, and NIL and transfer portal have made it, you know, almost, you know, impossible for coaches. And I'm just curious at what, you know, what you think the state of the sport is. And also, I wanted to get your thoughts on Danny Hurley staying. I thought that was huge for the sport.
Yeah, I think the sport itself is in a place where it needs some oversight. You know, I mean, NIL is running rampant, and there's really no rules. And when the NCAA tries to implement rules, somebody sues them. They've thus far been very successful in court, and so the rule becomes null and void. So I think it's clearly in a place where it needs oversight. I'm hoping it gets to the point where it's, you know, you just have collective bargaining and contracts and everything is above board right now, because now you have players who are allegedly signing NIL deals for sometimes millions of dollars, maybe even signing contracts, but those aren't public contracts. And so I think it's just in a unsustainable spot right now that's going to have to evolve.
All right, let's talk NBA draft. We get it in two nights, next Wednesday and Thursday of next week. This is a draft without a Victor Wembanyama, and there's really, you would agree, right? There's not a lot of buzz around this draft, but tell me what you think in terms of the quality of it. I mean, is there a player or two that you think could ultimately end up being a massive difference maker in an organization like Washington's?
I think there is. I just don't think we know who that player is yet, which is the... Yeah. You know, which is the storyline of this draft, because historically speaking, you can go back each and every year and there's an all-star to come out of the draft. Doesn't matter how bad the draft is. 2013 is kind of the worst draft in recent NBA history, and Giannis Antetokounmpo came out of that draft. Rudy Right. Gobert came out of that draft too. Now, other than that, there wasn't too much. But each and every year, you find somebody, and you also find somebody like outside of the top three. You know, you get Draymond Green or Jalen Brunson or, you know, Devin Booker or whoever. These guys were all picked after 10, and that happens each and every
Kawhi
year.
Kawhi Leonard, Giannis, as you mentioned.
Yeah. So what makes this draft, I think, a little bit more confusing is that there's nobody at the top of the draft that scouts and evaluators are excited about. You mentioned Wemby. But not even like Wemby was what we would call like a tier one prospect. There's not even like a tier two guy here. You know what I mean? And so whoever goes number one or number two in normal years, they're somewhere probably after five, and that's somewhat conservative. But again, I do think history tells us there is someone in here somewhere who's got star potential. That potential just hasn't really revealed itself yet.
All right, so can we at least guess? I mean, when you say there's no tier two guy, I mean, forget that there's not the, you know, the franchise changer like a Wembanyama, or like people thought about Zion, you know, when he came out. But you're saying that the tier two guys aren't in this draft. Like, there's no Brandon Miller. There's no, you know, whomever right. You would consider to be tier two in recent years. So, I mean, that's a bad draft on paper going in.
It is. Yeah, no, 100%. It is a bad draft on paper. And I think what, especially in terms of star power, my kind of, you know, my caveat to that is that somebody is going to emerge who we're not expecting.
Of course.
Know? But the tier one and tier two prospects, they're the guys who have the most outward, the most obvious benchmarks for future success. It's not that they're certain stars, even Wemby last year, there were people who said, like, hey, is his body gonna last? Is this a sustainable physical archetype? But I think that this year, when you have no one who has such overwhelming markers for future success, everything's a proposition, right? So it's high risk, high reward, or what are you looking for? And what are you willing to risk for it? And I think that's kind of the danger. Like for Washington and Atlanta and teams like that that pick at the top of the draft, I think one of the things that's challenging is that from ownership to fan bases, they're used to a certain return on that investment. And this year, chances are you're not going to get that return, and it's going to go down as like, oh, well, they messed that up, especially if you assume that some star is going to reveal himself in the teens or the 20s or the 30s someday that no one anticipated. I mean, if you talk to the people who drafted, you know, Nikola Jokic in the second round, they will tell you they had a pick in the mid-first round. They didn't take him because they had no idea he was going to be this good. But right. Fans don't remember it that way. You know what I mean? So that's the danger of picking atop this draft is how it's going to be viewed in retrospect.
Yeah, like everybody can say almost, you know, like you just went through the list and we added to it. I mean, when the Wizards picked Jan Vesely in the 2011 draft and Kawhi Leonard went 15 overall, you still had teams like Milwaukee who took Jimmer Fredette, you know, five right. picks behind before Kawhi. You know, there are multiple big mistakes that are made in this draft. It really is. Don't you think, unless you have, you know, the true, obvious, transformational kind of superstar at the top of it, it's actually a bigger crapshoot than even the NFL draft is?
It is a crapshoot, and I think the amount of resources that are invested in this, not just in terms of, like, going out and scouting, but in by extension, the basketball evaluation. But the amount of evaluation that goes into analyzing these prospects' minds and bodies is something that we don't talk a lot about, like the psychological assessments yeah. these guys have to do, the personality tests, the medical testing. So they are really digging in at every level conceivable, and yet still there are going to be mistakes and there are going to be surprises because it's a futures market. You're betting on something not next year, not even 2 years down the road, but what's somebody going to be 5-10 years from now?
All right, let's talk about this draft anyway, though we have no idea the one or two players that will ultimately be really, really good players, star players. But let's look at the Wizards at two. There are two French players that are mocked almost everywhere to go 1-2 in some order. Tell us about them and maybe another player or two that would be worthy at number two overall.
So I think there's probably three guys in the wheelhouse for the Wizards right now. The first is Alex Saar. Alex Saar has been the betting favorite to go number one in this draft. He's a 7-footer. He's originally from France, but he played this year in the NBL in Australia after playing the previous 2 years at Overtime Elite in Atlanta. And he is an exceptional mover for his size. He's fluid. He's graceful. He covers the court. That means he can be switchable defensively. It means he can fly around and make up ground in a hurry in defensive rotations. And the defensive end of the floor is where he has the highest upside. You've seen people like to compare him to someone like Evan Mobley, which I think is a good archetype to get in your mind. I'm not sure he's as naturally talented as Evan, but that's the type of player we're talking about. The questions are on the offensive end because this is someone who averaged, I think, 9 points a game this year in Australia. And he's very lean, he's skinny, and so people say, well, Wemby and Chet were skinny too. That's true, but he's not that level of talent. So you have this mobile but skinny 7-footer, and he's got to add some muscle and be able to play through contact to be able to be a finisher at the NBA level. And then you're really hoping the shooting clicks long term. I think that's the big bet on Alex Saar, but immediate impact defender from day one, some offensive upside that's just not quite there yet, and then he's got to get stronger. That's the quick scouting report on him. I think that is who Washington favors because when you look at the pieces they have, he can slot in with some of those other young guys and he can give you a defensive anchor and things can really start to develop from there. The good news, I think, for Washington is that there's kind of recent news that that Atlanta and Saar may not be on the same page. Depending on who you ask, it might be Atlanta or it might be his representatives. But there seems to be some evidence that he's trending away from that number one spot, even though he has been the betting favorite in Vegas. The second guy, the other Frenchman you mentioned, is Zachary Richechet. And this is about a 6'8", 6'9", kind of 3-4, so wing combo forward, who shoots the ball really well from the perimeter. He's got a pretty looking shooting stroke, and he can defend at a pretty high level. So he fits that kind of coveted 3-and-D archetype that has a definite role in the NBA. But he's not a creator. He's not the kind of offensive alpha that you usually see get drafted this high. Now he's getting some momentum to go to Atlanta right now, as we think they're moving off of Saar. He's also got a definite interest from San Antonio at 4 if he were to slip that far. And there's speculation that San Antonio could explore moving up to pair a shooting Frenchman with Wemby, because that makes sense on a couple of different levels. I think the third player that Washington fans need to be aware of is Donovan Clingan.
Right.
If Atlanta were to move that number one pick and someone else were to take Saar number one, that creates a situation where if Atlanta has to choose between Richechet and Clingan, they may say, you know what, we've already got young wings here. We just drafted a young wing last year, and we don't want to be redundant with this. And if you look at arguably the three players on our roster who may have a long-term future here with this club, they all play in the middle of the lineup. What we don't have is our big man of the future, and we don't have necessarily our point guard of the future. So those would be the best fits. I think that's the case, if Saar goes one, for Washington to consider someone like Klingon at 2, because he is that defensive anchor who's just got tremendous size. And again, some untapped offensive potential when you talk about a guy who's about 7'2", who can dribble, who can pass, and may even be able to shoot down the road.
Yeah, there's no doubt that Klingon, everybody saw him in the tournament and in the championship game and UConn's back-to-back. At 7'2", whatever he is, because he's a large man, I think he's more fluid, more mobile than maybe people even understand. But my question to you is, as you described what Atlanta might do, if the draft is what you say it is, why would somebody come up to number one? Why would there be any interest in jumping up to number one? Is Saar's potential at 7'1", you know, and it's you know, and being a guy that could potentially defend and develop something offensively, is it just that, you know, projection that somebody might think that can happen?
Well, because we're very literally trying to predict the future, different teams and even different voices inside the same team are going to have different opinions. And so some people might have a very different long-term projection for Saar than others. Same for every prospect in this draft. Some of it's situational, about like the style of play they utilize. So for example, Klingon is going to be much more valuable for a team that believes in utilizing a drop coverage defensive scheme in terms of how they defend ball screens. If you want to get out and hard hedge or trap ball screens, Donovan Klingon's probably not your guy. There's lots of different variables, but again, it comes down to the fact that different people and different organizations have different opinions. And the other thing too is, some of them, especially when you look at teams like San Antonio, teams like New York, teams like Oklahoma City, they have so many future assets that they can afford to allocate some to move up. So I'll give you a hypothetical. One of the things that's been people have wondered about is, if San Antonio really covets Richechet, could they move up and try and deal with Atlanta? And people have said, well, okay, San Antonio has the 4 and 8 picks, but you know what else they have? They have Atlanta's pick next year. So they could say, hey, we'll swap 4 and 1, and then we'll give you back your pick for next year. So there's lots of different scenarios there. But I think like the amount of assets the team has in their war chest, so to speak, also impacts how aggressive they can afford to be to move up and take a swing on somebody if they really believe in the upside.
We're talking to Adam Finkelstein from 24/7 Sports. He also does work for CBS Sports. I got a minute left here. I wanted just your quick opinion on a couple of players. Can sure. Dalton Knecht be a big-time scorer at the NBA level? And
absolutely.
Creator?
The question is whether he's going to be a bad defender or a marginal defender, because he's not going to be a good defender. But yes, I think he can be a good scorer, though.
What about Zach Edey? Where is his draft projection? And I know I've seen a lot of videos of him out there shooting threes, and he actually does not have a bad stroke at all, I don't think. But what are the NBA guys projecting Zach Edey to be at the NBA level?
There's a wide range of opinions on Edey, but the quick hitter is everything I just said about Klingon being system specific. Is even more so for Edey, because he's got to play at a slower tempo. He's got to play exclusively drop coverage, yep. And he's got to play for somebody who's willing to throw it into the post a little bit, which not every NBA team does. So if he gets in a setting where they do all those things, I think his upside is higher, but it's very system specific.
All right, give me a player. We both admit that, you know, who the hell knows. But somebody's going to come out of this draft that we're going to point to and say, you know, he went 12th or he went 9th or he went 17th or he was in the second round like Jokic or Draymond. Give me the player that you're actually telling people that you're excited about and you think's got a chance.
The top one on my board is Ron Holland. He finished as the number one high school player in the country last year. He's a big 6'7" wing. He's one of the most competitive players in this draft. He's a high-level athlete. He gets after it defensively. People are concerned about the shooting, but it's not broken, and it's been trending in the right direction the last couple of years, and I just refuse to bet against a hyper-competitive, big-time athlete who plays both ends of the floor and keeps getting better.
You just convinced me, because you talked about all the intangible stuff, and that's a big part of it, is looking for that guy who's a badass competitor. Thanks, Adam. Really appreciate it. Good stuff. Adam Finkelstein, everybody, 24/7 Sports. We are done for the day. Thanks to Adam. Thanks to Greg Wyshynski. Thanks to Nate Davis, who all joined us on the show. Who's up next?
It is the rooster, cock-a-doodle-doo.
Chris Russell back in his chair next, right after a couple of commercials, but just a few. Hang in there for Rooster. Back tomorrow.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
And a minimal salary cap hit. Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some from my mom, too.
You fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.